I became a man, I put away childish things, including the fear of childishness and the desire to be very grown up. This is a quote from the wonderful C.S. Lewis that appropriately mirrors the life of the full of wonder artist, photographer, and writer Jerry Downs, and hopefully many of our lives. Jerry's latest book is Why You Were Born. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. So, hey, Jerry. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm so pleased to be here.
You know, I thought about calling your book a photographic mythology rather than a photographic essay, so I decided I'd better look up the definition of myth, and it was great. I found a person or thing having only an imaginary or unverifiable existence. And it also said, believed by many people, but not true.
Well, I think that would be perfect, exactly right, because life is, in fact, that. On every count, believed by many people, but not true.
Right.
No, that's really great, yeah.
No,
I concur.
Yeah, I liked it as well, especially in this time when everyone is after truth. And yet they hold on, or we all, rather, hold on to what we feel is true, or our lives will start tumbling down.
Well, the thing is that they're correct. It is true. But it's personal. It's true to them.
Yes.
And truth, like everything, is infinite. Every variation imaginable is true. But back to your myth thing, it's true only within that context. We make this up. I mean, literally, we make it up. From our own lines of thoughts, we create this picture.
Yes.
And that's kind of the point. The point is to make it up. I used to think, there's a section in the book about illusions. And I used to kind of think, you know, you hear from physicists and you hear from spiritual teachers, this is all an illusion. And there's this, like, you're being fooled. But when I really looked at it, and I'm really into illusions, I'm in a bunch of optical illusion books, and I even talk about it sometimes. The illusion is actually how this is created. The illusion is the mechanism for making this visible. So it's not that it's here to fool us. It's actually the thing that makes it possible. I think that's very different.
It is very different. And it does enable. So it's, you know, it's the shifting sands, which allows for everything.
And that's, again, the point. If in this whole enlightenment business.
These days it is a business.
we really need to lighten up about this enlightenment thing, because that's the same thing that's, well, this book is about remembering what you knew as a child. And so I was the fifth of 11 kids. And so I got to be a kid a lot longer than a lot of people got to be a kid. Got to be, before I started school, I was in heaven. I was in bliss. I was connected to this and every other thing in the world. But when you're born, you really don't know anything. Well, you know an enormous amount spiritually and conceptually, and you bring an awful lot to the world. But you don't know what a cup looks like. You don't know what. So you have to discover it. You literally have to create your world. And so you become completely fascinated with it, the cup's round, and it holds something, and it rolls a certain way, and some of them bounce, some of them break. And so you have to put all this into place. But the interesting, odd thing is that at a certain point, I mean, you can't be lost forever into the cup. It's like you should move on and find out about the table. But at a certain point, you yourself or society at large or your parents start to tell you that this is the way it is. You've got it. And your inquisitiveness, your creativity, inquisitiveness are like biologically essential for life. You have to be create. You are divine. I mean, that's the most divine thing of all. You're a creative. But as soon as you say that you understand the story or the world, that all stops. And when it stops, life, I mean, the definition of life is movement and growth. And when it gets solidified, and that's everything. That's a relationship, or that's a religion, or that's a politics. That's the end of the game. It stops.
Right. And interestingly enough, going back a few moments, that is, you know, so that's like if you define the truth, then it is no longer.
Oh, it disappears. Yeah. All these things are true. Like you have a born-again experience. You have some epiphany. And those are really real. But the trick is if you think that that's the end of the game and you keep trying to recreate that, or you fall in love and it's like, why can't we have it like it was in the beginning? And you start to do that business. When you fall in love or when you have an epiphany, it really rises out of the fact that you were willing to suspend what you thought. You're willing to let go of concepts. You're willing to think new. Okay, this person's interesting, so I'm willing to let go of that I can't have a relationship, or I suddenly see the world as a magical place because I found some beautiful thing about life or religion. It didn't come out of a solid state. It came out of a really unstable, chaotic, I'm willing to accept the unknown. And that's where it rose from. So to say that you finally got the answer, you don't get to have another one. And that's really sad.
But I want another one.
There's no surprise. You need, surprise, by definition, is you don't know, and then you get surprised.
Right. So, well, it's similar with synchronicities in life. It's once I started noticing more and more and more the synchronicities, initially it's like getting blown away by the synchronicity for a while, so you're missing the next few ones because I got hung up on that one, and wow, wasn't that amazing? And it's like, yeah, it was amazing, but so is every moment of life amazing.
Yeah, well, synchronicities is another section of the book, which is, I like photography or creativity. Everything's about making connections. And the more peculiar in my world, the better. I mean, I love beautiful pictures, but getting a funny picture or getting something that's put, that's magic. That's like, that's really, that's the thing.
Yes, and knowing your photographs, as I do, it's all about the layering and the different levels. You can see you in a photo, but if you look more closely, the way shadows are playing or the way things are positioned in the photo, you're seeing a whole other scene. And of course, that mimics all of life.
Yeah, so in one sense, I mean, it's not really a photo book, and it's not really a how-to book, and it's not really a self-help thing. But there are all these things kind of, it's about, I like all of it.
It's about life. It's about life. Your life. And as DeWitt Jones, who is a great photographer for National Geographic, he calls you his twin brother from another mother. And the way that you live your life and the way that this book will relate, I mean, you have very personal written essays in here, and the photos are just as personal to a different view or viewer, I think, to the point where the point of the book is you are his twin brother from another mother, and you're my twin brother from another mother and father or whoever. It's just that we're all in it together. And so the title of your book is Why Were You Born? Why is the title not Why I Was Born?
Why You Were Born. It's so catchy. the title occurred to me the same way that everything else in the book occurred to me. It occurred to me. And it was like, well, that rings. I mean, it's like, why were you born? It's like... But your point about the twin brother thing is, it's not unique to me. What I know is not unique to me. So I have every confidence. It's like really kind of ridiculous to make a statement like, I'm going to tell you why you were born. I mean, how pompous and ridiculous and where do you get off? But I remembered. When I was 5 years old, I made a blood oath that when I grew up, I would tell adults what they forgot about being a kid. And I did it from this position of, it was just so sad to see what had happened to them. It was like heartbreaking. And then it was really heartbreaking knowing that in order for me to pull this trick off, I actually had to forget myself. I had to go through what they went through to forget something so magical and pure and self-evident. So I did. I completely forgot. And life was really kind of horrific for me going through school. And I questioned why I was here all the time. But fortunately, throughout the entire thing, there were these moments of abject, really remarkable beauty and preciousness that told me to keep going. And then when I when I wrote the book, I had no intention of writing Why You Were Born. I just looked at all my pictures and it was like, well, what are you up to? Because it's all over the board. I don't just do barns. I do barns, but I do everything else. I do cities, and I do people, and I do kids, and I do and a lot of shadows and just walking around. And I take as many pictures with my iPhone as I do with the big boy camera, as DeWitt would say. He's really funny because, you know, he has like 56 covers on National Geographic, but all he does now, he rarely takes a picture with anything other than his iPhone. It's really funny. It's not like I'm over it, but they're really magical, and it's that same sense of everything is kind of interesting. So a lot of my pictures are just really ordinary stuff, but it's looking at it a different way.
Yes. Well, what is it about a photograph, do you think, that draws you in? And maybe you can talk about it from your own personal photographs, but also when you see someone else's, or when you see a DeWitt or a Joe Burrell or whoever.
Well, I want to be surprised. To take a good picture, all you have to do is show the world in a way that it hasn't been seen before, because we're programmed to pay attention to what we haven't seen. That's, if it's new, your mind goes, tell me what the story is. It's like, I don't know what that cup is, so tell me what that thing is. It's your. If we throw this into the divine, which we may as well, it's, and again, as soon as you start, language is funny. Because if I say God, you know, there's a that gets plugged into everything.
Right. And yes. And the way people will react to that is like, OK, you start talking about God, someone's going to go away.
Yeah.
But you can say the same thing without using the word God, and they'll be right there. So funny. Language is a funny thing.
Well, it is. So it's in the book. I actually say God.
And,
but I want to neutralize.
Did you capitalize the G?
Sometimes. I did. And why not? But I in the same sense of science or it's all God to me. I don't care. So I'm not religious about religious. This table is God. Every piece. There's a story in the book which is that happened in second grade, which is probably the most important moment of my life. And this was this. I was in Catholic school, fifth of 11 kids, Catholic. You think? So, this nun said, "Okay, this is probably not what you're supposed to say anymore, but I think it's true, and I want to tell you, children." And she's saying it like, "I'm going to save you from the eternal damnation." And she says, "We don't want you to play with Protestant or Jewish kids." And it was like, and then she, to make her point, she said, "If you play with dirt, it rubs off."
Ooh.
And so it's like, wow, that was really in my mythology, in my orientation of being kind of in bliss and connected to everything and walking through cornfields. They were all different. They were all unique. Everything was connected. So this and it so that really bothered me. So I just sat there and thought, and then I raised my hand and I said, and once we finally got to the question, I says, that can't be true. And, well, Mr. Downs, tell us why that can't be true. And I says, well, it's in the catechism. The first question is, what is God? And the answer is, God is love. And the second question is, where is God? And God is everywhere. So God has to be in the Jews and the Protestants, and in the dirt. I had to
add the dirt.
Well, I like dirt. So, and then she did the usual adult thing, which is, well, you don't understand. When you grow up, maybe you'll understand, because she had no answer. And that was totally unsatisfying. So I thought a little bit more. And then I had this massive epiphany. And I raised my hand again. She goes, what is it now, Mr. Downs? And I said, God is even in our confusion. And it was like, it wasn't just matter. It wasn't just people. It wasn't just the stars and things. God was in thoughts and concepts and energy. When God is everywhere, God's everywhere. That's like, there's no separation. There's no devil. There's no nothing other than God. So that's huge.
That was huge to carry from that time on. Yes.
Yes, but even that I forgot, because you can't. People don't take second graders seriously, and you have to make your way in the world, and. So eventually, I mean, it was kind of screwy knowing and not knowing, and how do you play this? Because unconsciousness is kind of, I'm not against unconsciousness. If you were completely conscious and you're all this white light glowing thing, there's no reason to be here. There's no reason to even have an earth. This table is unconsciousness. It's not white light in absolute sense. It's consciousness slowed down in the same way that we are. There has to be some sort of separation from the absolute to have anything exist. So, you got to lighten up about you're not it. You know, it's like, well, I'm not enlightened yet. You're enlightened this much. Take this and accept this part of it, because this part of it is unbelievably huge and marvelous, miraculous. The fact that we're sitting here and we're vibrating this little microphone and little things are bouncing up over there, and a week from now or 2 weeks from now, it'll appear on some radio bouncing off of some satellite. And we'll think this is all completely normal.
Yes.
But it's magical.
It's totally magical, yes. And I know I interviewed this man who was the developer of Don Hawk, and he was Korean, and we had a translator and all of that. And he said he was an enlightened master. And so I asked him, I said, well, what did you do once you were enlightened? And he gave me what I consider to be a perfect answer. He said, I got up earlier.
Yes.
More to do, more to see, more to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's like that chop wood, carry water deal. It's like, what do you do before you're enlightened? You chop wood and carry water. What do you do afterwards? You chop wood and carry water.
Right.
But the context is completely different.
Yes.
So nothing has to change to have life be really remarkable. Because my life was so difficult, eventually it dawned on me that I did not have to be, I didn't, the circumstances could not dictate whether I was happy or not. Because if they did, I would never be happy. So if I waited until this was correct or I had this or I had this before I was happy, I was never going to be happy.
Right. Okay, well, let's jump forward. You are the author of this book, and so people, I'm sure, are seeing you out in the world. This guy, he's happy now. And that makes you laugh, I'm sure, as much as anything else.
A lot. Well, yes, you're right. It was like that radio interview that I was telling you about, that we have Jerry Downs, who has the key to happiness. And Jerry, will you tell us? And it was like, no, I don't. Don't be ridiculous. One thing this book is not, here's 12 points that you need to do. If you did these things, that would work. Life is enormously personal. If you don't come up with your own way of doing this, you won't own it, and it won't be yours. And you won't proceed. And when it starts to not work, and it will start to not work, everything starts to not work, you'll blame me, or that he's not. That's not true, because that principle, and you'd be correct. You'd be absolutely correct to do so, because it's not yours. The point is to have this be yours. And yes, I'm happy. I'm infinitely happier probably than the general population, but that's not the point. Every day I get weird. Multiple times. But the difference is that I catch myself. I can see, I can feel. More importantly, I can feel. That's the read. The emotion is the read on how you're doing. And so it takes minutes or an hour or something to get over it, instead of hours or weeks or decades like it once did.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's the only difference.
Well, the photos draw out universality of truth, and in perhaps a more honest way, in that we don't have to rely on language.
No, that's, yeah, I guess you asked that question earlier. What's the deal with the pictures? Well, one thing is that they're an immediate read, and they are universal. And I know when I go out and take pictures, I no longer go out and look for pictures at all. I go out and look. Not everything is a good picture, but everything's worthy of attention. And out of that state of appreciation, then you see the picture, and sometimes it becomes a photograph. Sometimes it's a photograph, but sometimes, you know, it's like, but again, I want to be surprised. And I've taken hundreds of thousands of pictures. So to surprise me, kind of takes something.
Well, I like what you just said because it infers the, you know, like you said, everything deserves attention. And if you take that back into I deserve the attention that I'm giving, and it just is a total flow back into how attention isn't for something else.
Oh, and
it's for
the
us,
thing
or
that you
for
that,
me.
Well, I get in my enlightenment or my goofiness, depending on how you look at it, is that I'm having a conversation with the world, and I have the distinct feeling when I go out that the world likes appreciation.
Okay. Yes. And since we're rolling into our half hour, I want you to share your On Broadway in Boulder story, because that hits the nail right on the head right there.
Okay, good. This was great. So this is just the other day, and I'm walking down the street, and I'm on the phone, and I'm getting ready to hang up, and then I hear this voice behind me screaming, "Get out of the way! Get out of the way! Get out of the way!" And I turn around, and there's this guy. He's like, I don't know, 40, real wiry, on like a BMX bike, roaring right towards me. So I hang up the phone, and I get down, and I jump out of the way in some exaggerated, clowny way that I do. And he throws the bike down, and he's irate. He was like not mentally stable or on something or whatever, but he's running at me irate and screaming and mother this and son of that, and I'll just going at it. And I immediately ran to him, and I'm like greeting him like, "Hey, brother, how you doing?" And I'm every action he does, I mimic, and I grab him, and I'm holding him, and shaking his hand and telling him how wonderful he is. And it was like this Aikido without doing anything. And appreciation, loving this person, there was nothing about it. It was just this really pure and wonderful event that I was delighted to have happened. And it pointed out to me that I wasn't afraid. That was lovely.
You close out your book, "We Dance for the Sake of the Dance, Not to Get Done Dancing."
That's a good way to end. Endlessly, yes.
My guest from last week mentioned doing a tango, so it looks like we're keeping up the dancing. I appreciate
it.
Let's
keep up the dancing. Yes, indeed.
Jerry Downs, his book, "Why You Were Born," can be found at Amazon.com. To follow his photo essays, like many thousands literally in the world do, jerrydownsphoto.com. And for any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. For podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.